Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, you're listening to SupDoc.
I'm George Chen.
And I'm Paco Romaine.
And this is a show where we talk to interesting people with strong opinions about their favorite documentaries.
And on today's episode, we talk about the 2012 documentary Bones Brigade from director Stacy Peralta.
Yeah, Bones Brigade is about a skate crew. It's sort of a follow-up to Dogtown and Z-Boys. And we talk about this film with Bay Area blogger and comedian O.J. Patterson. O.J. Patterson.
O.J. Patterson in the
house. On hiatus. Hashtag on hiatus.
Hashtag not going to your show.
But hashtag still doing podcasts. Still doing some shows. What's the show? Are you still doing the video game show?
I am. Super Trash Brothers.
And that's like Mondays?
Every first Monday.
Every first
Monday. Where at?
At Soda Pop Penske's. It's a video game themed bar on California Street.
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco.
For all our listeners in Melbourne, Australia, which is where we have seven listeners.
No pinball.
Okay.
But it's next to Encore, so get that pizza.
Yeah, get that pizza.
I asked you to do the podcast, and you chose Bones Brigade.
Bones Brigade, an autobiography.
Oh, hashtag. Or,
hashtag.
Colon. Everything's hashtag.
Everything is not a hashtag.
Everything, like, hashtag four store in 20 years ago. No, yeah, no, it's a colon. A full colon.
Full colon.
Full colon.
An autobiography.
Yes.
And it's made by Stacy Peralta.
Yes.
Who has made a bunch of kind of extreme sports documentaries and apparently a documentary about the Crips and the Bloods. Have you seen that one?
No.
No, I haven't seen that either, but that's on his
I don't want to hear his perspective on it, to be honest.
I don't think so. I'm like, this is interesting. Why this guy?
Well, because there's an awesome one called The Bastards of the Party where somebody from the Bloods actually, like, you know, went back to the 50s when gangs were to protect yourself from police officers that were bussed in from the South to beat up black people in Los Angeles to people not understand, like the people who are currently in the gangs not understanding that history at all.
No, I didn't know that history either. Yeah.
And I don't think like some surfer dude's gonna help me understand the story. Even though,
his name is Stacy.
Yeah.
First of all,
he is half Mexican, so he has that to his credit.
Stacy,
according
Peralta?
To the Wikipedia's, so Peralta, and like I hadn't seen Dogtown and Z-Boys since it came out. But that is sort of the prequel to this movie in a certain sense.
Yeah.
Still him. And Craig Stesic, I think, is a co-writer on Dogtown and Z-Boys. Did you see Dogtown and Z-Boys?
I did, yeah.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time for me, too.
But I think that talks about the transition of skating from a surf culture to, like, a skate, like how surf culture and skate culture had sort of, like, merged and, like, this new form had developed in, I guess, the late 70s. That was the period that they talk about in Dogtown and Z-Boys. And I guess Stacy Peralta, I completely forgotten all this, is one of the main characters from that.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, an award-winning dude. Then he forms Pal Peralta. I don't remember if that happens in that movie or not, if Pal Peralta is formed much later. And yeah. So why did you choose this movie?
Well, like you said, it's a sequel. I like a good sequel. I like Terminator 2.
That's a good one.
I like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Godfather 2. Twos are good.
What about Babe, Pig in the Woods? Or the City?
Pig in the Woods 3.
Yeah.
You want to write that with me?
Yeah, let's do it.
He's scared the whole time.
It's a little foreshadowing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. What's going to happen to Babe?
Just stuck in the woods.
I didn't watch that one. I didn't watch Babe. But I had been a fan of skateboarding. Not doing skateboarding for almost a decade now, because back in 1999, Tony Hawk was like, hey, let's have a video game for the kids who like skateboarding but don't like to hurt themselves. Right. So I pretty much followed that entire series as a big video game fan. Mm-hmm. And one of the bonus that you earn from playing the game is get to watch like incredible skateboarding videos that you would normally have to like order from a skate magazine or get from a skate shop.
Are there like Easter eggs in the DVD or on the game?
It's yeah.
Basically like you win, you get to a certain level, then you just watch people actually doing all these.
Yeah.
Tricks. That's pretty amazing.
What was the game called?
It's Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
Uh-huh.
And this was back when like the X Games was relatively new and just the whole idea of skateboarding was like becoming more commercialized. Mm-hmm. And once I saw Rodney Mullen, I was like, well, I have to watch this for the rest of my life.
Yeah, no, Rodney Mullen is kind of my takeaway as like the kind of not, if not the hero of this piece, kind of like almost like, you know how in Watchmen you end up rooting for Rorschach?
Yeah, yeah.
Like Rodney Mullen's like the Rorschach. I know there's probably like a better analogy from any other movie, but
just murderous.
No.
Autistic.
Just the guy that's the truest to the ideal in a certain way.
Yeah.
I think that about Rodney. And there's also was a Thrasher game, right? Did you ever play the Thrasher game?
It was horrible.
Is it really bad?
Yeah. Well, because it
Well, what year was it? Because the graphics weren't so good.
It was like 99, 2000.
The graphics were pretty good. Like I feel like video game graphics made a huge leap around 96 or something.
Well, it went from like 2D planes to 3D.
Like Tekken is the first video game I remember, like that fighting ninja one, where it was like, this is like watching a movie.
Yeah.
That's the first time I felt that way about a video game.
Right.
You're a big game guy?
No, I play a couple. Mm-hmm. Madden has always been my game.
Yeah.
And Call of Duty. I play two, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My roommate has a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you actually never were a skateboarder?
I tried once.
Yeah.
Slammed myself really hard in the driveway.
Yeah.
And thought, you know, I don't need to do this.
And where'd you grow up?
I grew up like Deep East Bay.
Deep East Bay.
A city called Pittsburgh, California.
Pittsburgh. Okay.
Gotcha.
I grew up in San Jose, and it was like the thing, and actually in the era where this was the thing.
Yeah.
And I had a board once, and then I kind of had a similar thing. I'm like, I fear pain too much to continue this.
Well, when Tony Hawk is talking about being 12 and going to the hospital and being in, like knocked out and his two front teeth are knocked out and being like, I want to do this again. I was like, you have something I don't. Because like my thing.
Medical insurance mostly.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was not about like skateboarding and doing like extreme stuff.
You like wrestling though.
I did like a little wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did do a little, but I'm from the Midwest. I mean, that's what happened, you know.
So skateboarding was not a big thing for your generation?
No, I mean, I didn't know any skateboarders. I had a skateboard, but I had a crappy like Target skateboard or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, or Kids R Us or whatever hell was back then. Yeah. And what we would do is put a rope on a bike and then you tow somebody on the skateboard. That's the closest I ever got to skateboarding.
Yeah.
Well, a huge part of it is like how absentee are your parents?
Right.
Or how close are they? Because they either have to like completely not know that you're like potentially, you know, paralyzing yourself at any given moment on this stupid board. Mm-hmm. Or they're like, we'll take you to the hospital. We'll buy you like the skate decks. And that's kind of what the beauty of the documentary is, mm-hmm. is that like Dogtown and Z-Boys is all about like surf kids. What do they do when you can't surf? Mm-hmm. So you kind of like invent this entire genre. This was about like the first kids who were born on skateboarding, mm-hmm. and had people to look up to and thus had room to innovate. And thus you have like really cool home movie footage of, you know, Steve Caballero and Tony Hawk.
Yeah. I remember growing up and hearing about skateboarding and seeing Skateboard Magazine and thinking like it just seemed it was so California to me, and which seemed mystical and magical and like otherworldly, because growing up in Michigan, California just seemed like it was a planet away, and just being like seeing like palm trees, just being like, what the hell is going on? Like, what is that? You know, like just seemed so weird and urban to me.
Yeah.
You know, skateboarding.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it built off the fact that there were pools, and like that's something that maybe you didn't have in the Midwest, right? Like the pool scene.
Empty pools.
Yeah, empty pools because of the drought, because Jerry Brown was governor. That sounds familiar. But
full circle.
Yeah, but like that was a part of the development of that style. I mean, I feel like it's got to be the generation. It's interesting. I think we are all like, you know, slightly different generations, especially when you count like Stacy Peralta is really only, he's like less than 10 years, he's about 10 years older than all these kids
yeah.
that he formed, that got to form the Bones Brigade. That's like if, you know, like a guy putting together a boy band is only like 10 years older than the boy band. You
right.
know? So it's like he doesn't necessarily have all of the emotional skills that he needs to like kind of keep these, all these like basically, yeah, like they're, some of them are like either have overbearing, overprotective parents or just seem to be like feral children. You know?
Yeah.
That's a lot of what's happening. That's one thing I liked about it is that there's this weird family dynamic that forms with the Bones Brigade.
Yeah.
It feels like a band or, you know, any other just like kind of coming of age story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, I mean, from watching, I thought Stacy Peralta seemed to have a lot of foundation and a lot of wherewithal. I mean, the guy seems like a freaking genius, or at least he's one of those guys who sees an advantage and goes for it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, he was doing stuff at a young age that like most people wouldn't do, like putting together like Powell and Peralta and things like that.
Right.
Well, it's very interesting in that, like, it is an autobiography and so many documentaries are based in a single mindset or based in like a single perspective, but they only have one, that same perspective contributing. And this one, you had like people who hated Tony Hawk talking about how much they hated Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
It right next to a scene where Tony Hawk is like, yeah, they hated me. And it's weird that like within that frame, you kind of get this sense of like Stacy is smart in that he understands story in a very interesting way. Mm-hmm. And that like every time I've seen him depicted, like they had a theatrical version of Dogtown and Z-Boys
right, that he co-wrote. Right?
That he co-wrote, and then he actually like was contributing into the productions of it, where he's always painted, and probably rightfully so, as like the more level-headed, kind of like the Paul McCartney
okay.
of the Dogtown and Z-Boys, where it's like, I want to revolutionize by being in front mm-hmm. of it. And I want everyone to like take,
be a popularizer.
Yeah. I want to take it to the next level, which is almost counter to every other skate documentary where it's just like, yeah, we were just doing rails the whole time. Yeah. And we loved the party. Like you yeah. get a little bit of that.
Oh, doing rails.
Yeah.
In both senses. Okay. Gotcha. I was like, yeah, they would be doing rails.
Yeah.
They'd be, you know, yeah, but actually, yeah.
So it's such a, like a weird, interesting coincidence that like the pioneers uh-huh. and the prodigies of the sport were such an anomaly in terms of the culture of mm-hmm. the sport as well.
Well, like Tony Hawk, I mean, there was that moment where they compare him to his aesthetic rival at one point is Christian Hassoy, right? Who is like a hair metal equivalent of like a skater. And like, yeah. And then Tony Hawk and the whole Bones Brigade are portrayed as being more clean cut and goofy and straight edge, some of them, I think.
Well, I think they're even calling them Boy Scouts a lot
yeah.
in part of the doc.
Well, there was a brilliant ad that they used in the, like they knew it even as they were doing it in the 80s of like some person was quoted on one of the advertisements of like the Bones Brigades are the Bee Gees
oh, right.
of skateboarding.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and they used that on their ad, like the negative review, which is like, that's pretty freaking genius. Like to watch what they did with those ads and to have Peralta say, I don't want the word skateboard involved at all, you know.
And that might have been Craig Stesic that was responsible for the art direction and all that and the kind of like marketing slash like imagery. It's almost like actually having watched that Residence documentary, it reminded mm-hmm. me of that a
yeah.
little bit. Like there's all this stuff that they were doing that was outside of skateboarding specifically, the way the Residents was doing all this stuff that wasn't about music specifically, like they were making all these videos,
right?
They were creating an aesthetic. I did think I learned a lot about the Craig Stesic stuff in there. That I found that guy really fascinating. And, you know, he's older than the crew, but he's part of the marketing team and kind of part of the entire like visual identity of the Palo Peralta world, and I guess by extension, like the skate world as
yeah.
a whole.
Yeah. It seemed like it was almost kind of like having William S. Burroughs on your, as your photographer or something, you know, like he seemed nuts and yeah. like they were saying you couldn't understand what he was saying most of the yeah. time. And like he just, or like a Terry Richards, is that the guy's name? Like, oh, like the photographer,
the Vice guy,
yeah,
who's around now. I don't, I wouldn't compare him to him.
Well,
I
he just like edgy
around young people, yeah, a little creepy,
shirtless with
yeah,
young
hey,
boys.
Take your shirts off, young boys. Hang out on this empty pool with me. Well, and Glennie Friedman is in there a little bit, and that guy is really fascinating. You know, Glennie Friedman, the photographer.
Yeah,
he shot a lot of the early punk rock stuff and the skate stuff. And early hip hop stuff, like a lot of the iconic photos of a lot of music stuff, is Glennie Friedman. So it's interesting that he was had a broad enough Venn diagram reach to be like, I'm whatever it is, whether it's music or skating or art or whatever it is, he's just found the edge of it and the stuff that was yet about to break.
That's cool.
It's pretty interesting stuff. So he's quoted in there a lot. But yeah, as it is an autobiography, what. I, you know, knowing that in the back of my head that it's an autobiography, yeah, it does seem like he, Peralta was allowing for a lot of different talking head moments, but they're all shot in that garage. I noticed that they're all in the same background for the most part. And they would do these, like the interview would have a little tracking shot with it. So it was like, it had this little sense of motion, even though it was just a talking head interview. I thought that was cool. That was like a skateboard move, right? Like just put some motion in it,
right,
even when there's not motion.
Yeah, absolutely. And that weird garage thingy, which it must be a sound studio somewhere.
Well, it's so weird that like the idea, like there's a skateboard smashed through the window.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Of the car that like yeah. These are like, you know, like 50 40-year-old dorks. Yet they're still portraying this like, you know, they all have kids.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one of them apparently made $20 million in a sale. Oh, you find out at the end of the doc, you know, from his company. So like,
which is great because like from the doc, you understand how much that means and not means to them. Like that person, Rodney was the person that sold World Industries. And you never get the sense of like, one, he's already came from money. But you never get the sense that he wanted any of that, which is a very interesting dynamic to have in this movie about sports. Because usually it would almost be like, wouldn't it be weird if Michael Jordan was on a dream team with Spud Webb or like some of these fringe basketball players that are like more style than substance.
Right.
Wouldn't that be a weird situation where someone's trying to get 50 points a game and the other one's just trying to really perfect his on-bench play, really trying to really celebrate in a very interesting way.
Well, they talk about that dynamic of like none of them were team sports people, but then you created a team.
Yeah.
So that was like, yeah, it's the...
Well, that group thing, I mean, everybody wants to be part of a group, you know, especially like-minded people. Like not, they don't necessarily want to have the jock mentality, you know, but they, you know, everybody wants to be with like-minded folks.
It wasn't like anything else that had ever existed. This was like a sort of constructed thing where you got the best guys from each of their disciplines.
That's one thing I did think was interesting about skating too, because like for them, even though we think of them, they're athletes, but they were not team sports guys. And when you think of like the skaters that I knew, it was all still kind of anti like high school, like football and things like that. It was still a little bit of a loner, artist, weirdo sport. So that, and definitely someone like Rodney Mullen exemplifies that.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, Tony Hawk does also.
Yeah.
Because he is, the way they talk about Tony Hawk is interesting. I did think a lot about comedy watching this also. Like the way they describe what different people did and what their skills were. And I just read an interesting quote from Craig Stessic where he talks about like skating as a form of creativity. Like it's linear. It's, you have to like adjust to your environment and you're just carving out space. Like you're navigating. He's like, it's like sculpture that you're creating. That's one interesting way to think about it. So in a way there is something similar to the group dynamic is really interesting. And then like the fact that yes, there's parallels to all kinds of creativity, stand-up, comedy, music, you know, graffiti. That's all kind of a piece that skateboarding has come to represent. Like people hold on to it as like this youth thing. These dudes are like 50 and still skating. Like Caballero is like 50 now, so it's, and he's still doing it.
Yeah,
it's really crazy.
Yeah, it I think the great thing about skating in general, or how it's portrayed, is that you are very much judged on your merit. Not a lot of other things are, and not a lot of other things are that creative, you know? Like, yeah, sure, there's a scoring system for high diving at the Olympics, but you don't see, there's not a real cultural push to like see what's going on in their heads or like what the moves actually are. I think since it's so on such a street level art, like any street art, the moves that they do actually have some emotional and mental weight. Like, you know, kind of in a way what they're doing, even if you can't grasp how they're doing it.
Yeah.
Like that board flipped. Gravity was, they didn't just like jump off something. Something magical happened. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know. It makes me very emotional thinking about it, because like anyone can do it, but they can't. Mm-hmm. Like skateboarding is the only thing that you see every day that like, I mean, everybody could stand on a skateboard, but very few people can make it like do things that you didn't know were possible.
Mm-hmm. And the video game, because it seems like you got into this because of Tony Hawk game, is there like a Rodney Mullen kind of like moment? Is there like a freestyle section in the game where you can be doing like all these board tricks and stuff?
Eventually.
Yeah.
I think the technology had to get to the point that they, all right, we mastered ollies, and we mastered manuals. And then it turned into, all right, what other button combinations can we do? And eventually I feel magical while playing those games, because it's like Casper to anti-Casper to Primo. And it's just like I'm learning the language of what they're doing, as well as seeing like my little avatar do exceptional things.
Yeah. I thought I knew what an ollie was, but there was a lot of things that were introduced to me just watching this documentary, like the caballero.
Yeah.
Which it seemed like everyone's just like, let's do a trick that has our name in it. The people that I thought stood out in the thing for me, I didn't know if I related to Rodney Mullen, but there was something very like, you know, oh, he's like a genius. He's like that kind of character. And then there was a lot of stuff with Lance that was very relatable too. I feel like those two end up being, in my mind, a little bit more of the heart of the story than Tony was.
Was Rodney the guy they were talking about that ran out of the van?
Mm-hmm.
That was Rodney Mullen.
Yeah,
that was the guy.
The guy who did the freestyle, all the like, just like flat land, just like crazy
right.
Board
and he would just leave in a hotel at night and come back in the morning and have 9 new tricks. And okay, I wasn't sure like if that was if Rodney, the guy they were talking about, was the same guy.
Yeah,
that you see.
Well, it's weird because like the photos of him when he's like 13 look very different.
They do.
Than what he looks like now.
Yeah.
He seems real shell-shocked. Do you feel like that, like as a person?
Yeah.
Or is it just shyness? Like when he's on camera, he's got a real fidgety, like nervous energy.
I just thought he was always going to cry.
Yeah, he felt like he was going to break out crying the whole time. Yeah.
A real soft, I think, me and Tony. Even if he was really happy, he was just like kind of, but I think that was consistent. I mean, they called him Mutt for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't think you like, I don't know. He even know, like people who not behave like that, but people who have those traits know what's being said, but they still kick. Like he's like, dude, is he autistic? Like he knows that people think that he is on the spectrum, which is very, I don't know, not very common, but I know people like that.
Yeah, I feel like there's people that maybe present a certain way, but they're like aware that they're doing these things. Yeah, they're not necessarily that they have Asperger's or something, which I've heard recently that they've even gotten rid of Asperger's as a definition for a diagnosis for a lot of people, because it just is like the condition of being in the 21st century as a young person.
We all have Asperger's.
Yeah. But who did you relate mostly to any one person, or did you kind of like take a little bit from everyone?
I never related to Tony.
You never related to Tony watching this movie?
If only because like he's like Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, yeah, he's super good. And he also has all this infrastructure to be super good.
His parents were part of the skateboard.
Yeah, like, his dad, right? Was the
ran one of the parks or something.
I just love, like, when I first started watching it, I was like, God, he's got a lot of, like, stuff on. That little stork of a kid has so much stuff on. And that one guy's like, he wore all those pads. Like, he's, like, covered in pads. You know? I thought it was a thing not to wear that stuff back then. I didn't realize that skaters wore all that stuff, that even helmets. Like, because the pictures you see on Thrasher and Skateboard Magazine, they never have helmets on. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was brought up as like them being a little too clean cut and a little too Bee Gees, because a lot of the other people were just thrashed and just partying and like were just punks, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there's a huge proponent of like it didn't get, well, one, as a kid, you should, kids, listen to the sub doc, wear your pads.
Yeah. But this also has been brought to you by O.J. Patterson.
Yeah. I think it was also the idea that like skateboarding was structured very differently from now to then, and that like everything was vert, everything was super high up. So it made sense that, you know, a bunch of little kids were forced to wear their pads. Yeah. But also like street skating is where you see less protection. Yeah. And I think that's almost kind of like the point of it. I felt like I was scared off of skateboarding because there's like this mythos of like, yeah, you're going to get like this huge gash on your knee and you're going to like it. And then you're going to go back to the place where you got that gash and you're going to face it. No PTSD. Like, what?
Well, that's like Tommy Guerrero, I think they bring in as a representative of that. And there's a lot of Bay Area tie-ins to all this stuff. Like, I know Caballero is from San Jose, Guerrero is from San Francisco, and there's a lot of this skate culture. I grew up here, and it's just like skate culture is very embedded.
A lot of Metallica.
Were they skating a lot? Is that, or just like that they liked Metallica? Or
I think it's incredible that they got the specific like 80s Metallica tracks.
Oh, well, they got the rights to play that in the movie. Yeah.
Which is like, yeah, that's pretty much like, that's the funny thing. I got a lot of musical cues growing up from playing the Tony Hawk series because they just had a swath. And then I read an interview with somebody who was just like, yeah, we don't listen to all that hip hop that they play on the soundtrack. We normally just listen to like 80s metal, which is like, I mean, it felt, for a doc, to feel so much like a time period, like this really captured it in a way that almost like Freaks and Geeks captured it, where you're like, yeah, it's nothing's cliche. It's all like, you know, middle class values being portrayed in a very specific time.
Right. Which is basically mid late 80s, or I guess it starts in the 80s. Early 80s. Yeah.
Which, so I mean, there's obviously not a lot of like African American dudes involved. Like, when did that? I wonder when like that kind of hit like black youth, you know, like black teen, you know, like
I noticed specifically around the kind of the hyphy scene, or like there was a Berkeley scene that was like all these kids that were in. Like the kids that were in the pack, or like Lil B and that group of people, they were all, there was this moment where like skating had hit with black kids in 2006 ish or something. But I don't know. Like I think of it as a suburban sport just because I grew up in San Jose. It's a suburb. So there was like a lot of Latino kids that were doing it also. It was just basically like kind of like a punker thing to do. Like people that were into skating were also kind of into metal and punk. I didn't see any goth skaters. I would be great if there's
too much
a goth
sun.
Skate
too much sun for goth.
Yeah, like
skaters.
A goth skating scene would have been real interesting. But at the same time, it's like when you grew up in the suburbs, if you're someone who's not like trying to just be normal or whatever, then all those people gravitated to each other, like the goth people and the skater kids and the stoner kids and the metal kids would kind of gravitate. And I was none of those specifically, but I was always like sort of attracted to that energy. So I don't know. I mean, going to that question, I don't know if like demographically across the board, is skateboarding still popular across racial and geographical lines, or is it like just a California thing, or what is it?
Oh, I think it's, I mean, beyond that now. In today's date, I think it's universal. It's worldwide, but
you didn't skate. You tried it. You said
I tried
it. Yeah. OJ's black, by the way. I don't get that from anything in the interview so far.
Can you put like with OJ Patterson and then in parentheses black?
I'm like, why are they asking that to OJ like that? Like, you know, right? You know the answer.
Why not ask a black guy? That's our next podcast. Ask a black guy.
and you do the podcast Black Scronauts, which is good also. But yeah.
It did seem like there was a sea change across like cultural lines, but I don't think it's ever gotten to the potency of like huge collections of people, mm-hmm. Black people skate.
Yeah.
And if it is, there hasn't been that like almost the paragon example that kind of like
a star.
Yeah, there hasn't been the Tiger Woods, Serena Williams kind of thing.
There were so many people in Bones Brigade that there had to be more people of color. I mean, you have Tommy Guerrero and Caballero as I think the main people of color in the core stars of Bones Brigade. But yeah, it's a pretty white group overall.
Definitely pretty white.
I feel like if we grab this Thrasher from 2011, the 30-year anniversary of Thrasher, I saw, you know, a little bit of diversity, but still not really any women per se.
Yeah, it's definitely a dude sport.
Oh, or we only had to do two pages to find a black person.
What's his name?
Does that have a name?
Someone who knows this world way better than us is probably like fuming right now. Just tell us on Twitter, like
his name is Grant Taylor.
Okay, like who should we be checking out? You know,
well, I mean, Paul Rodriguez, mm-hmm. His son, the son of Paul Rodriguez, or
the comedian,
yeah.
Is a skater.
He's a skater. He's like the.
Well, George Harrison's son apparently.
Yeah, that's right. That came up in the doc, right? They went to the UK and they went to George Harrison's house, Dahani. Yeah.
The way that this movie is personified, though, or the way that it's depicted, it's just like everybody was skating. They made millions of dollars on skate, which is true. But I don't know if that's like pure because of like the excess of the 80s that it rose to such prominence, mm-hmm. or if it really was like such a cultural phenomenon.
Well, having a board with your name and face attached to it seemed to be like that is like dropping your album, right? That's like the thing. You get royalties on a piece of
$1 a board.
And then there's kids in like Iowa that are writing your name. That's crazy when you think about that. That's the endorsement thing that you want. That's making it, I guess, in their world. I guess it would be making it in any of our worlds, let's be honest. Yeah. If anyone would buy anything that had our names on it.
I'm hoping.
Like, I'm just have a pen with my name on it and trying to sell it. But yeah.
I'll buy that.
Paco's line of moleskins.
they're comfortable.
Look, if anyone wants to buy a SupDoc Pog or something, we'll make this.
We have bobbleheads.
Yeah, bobbleheads.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
OJ if he went to any of the X Games, because I know they were here for a while.
It was a couple of, off the coast. No, I kind of kicked myself off of that because I'd watch them at home, ESPN2. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I never made it to an X Games.
Okay. I went to the first one that was in like Russian Hill where they had. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I went down there. I watched some skateboarding.
I remember watching the first time I saw one of those games televised on like basic cable. And I was just like, really? This is on TV now? This is out of.
Yeah.
I hung around with a lot of people that were skaters. I was going to say another thing I remembered watching this. They show like the stuff like Animal Chin, Search for Animal Chin, is like Jackass, that entire culture. The skate video culture, I think, is also where Jackass comes from. And there's a lot of pranky stuff in there. And there is a lot of just random funny non sequitur video stuff right. that happens in those worlds. And it's just like of an era where they're just being goofy. I've never seen Animal Chin, but it's been yelled at me so many times in my life.
Really?
Being named George Chen.
Really?
So just people being like, hey, what's up, Animal Chin? I'm like, all right. is this racist? I don't know what's going on. Are you calling me an animal? I don't know what's happening.
So you haven't watched it?
I've never seen it. Have you seen it?
No, I've never seen it.
I didn't watch
okay,
it.
Okay, so we're the only people. Me Animal Chen.
Well, maybe it's because I was hanging with stupid skaters. not that you're stupid. You're great.
Well, it was, I think one of the brilliant things about the whole situation is that everyone has kind of been so successful that they can have some brevity about it. Like, true. I feel like it was a little bit too precious on like Dogtown and Z Boys. But in this one, they're like, yeah, we made a horrible movie that people really liked.
Right.
And
nobody seemed to like that movie that they made.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which is like, I don't think they would have gotten that if Stacy wasn't a acclaimed filmmaker already, mm-hmm. nor if those guys would have been 20 or more years removed from like their apex as competitors. Mm-hmm. I think like them being, they could let their guard down because yeah. they've accomplished so much.
Right, right, right. They can be like, look at what bad actors look like.
Yeah.
They could spend most of the movie just crying. They have so much money
when
now.
When did the crying really start? About like
about a
starts.
Minute into the documentary.
Was it crying?
I've never really? Seen so many 50-year-old white men crying.
That's a selling point of the movie. Yeah. Like if you have any takeaway, if yeah. you want to see middle-aged white men crying.
My 401k, that's the only like 2008 was the only other time. Dead air. Don't let it go dead.
No, it's fine. We have a great edit point now. Great edit point.
We're just giving those white guys space to cry. Just like, yeah, man, it's really poignant. Well, yeah, I don't know. I think I anticipate it, but at what age does it all like kind of hit you that like you were in part of something important or right. that you lost something so drastically? Or because I'm sure, you know, 10 years before, like if this came out in 2003, they'd be like, you know what? I still harbor resentment to Tony yeah. Hawk.
Yeah, you know who I fucking hate? Stacy fucking Peralta.
George Powell.
Yeah.
Apparently it was still beef with George Powell. He's like, apparently I'm a big villain in this whole thing.
Which are great documentaries when you see that like there was a change.
Yeah.
Like there was enough, like they were like, oh, this isn't gonna work. Like it's too bitter. So they have all the footage from the first take and then they go do it for the like, that's how the Chic documentary felt. Like they're just like, oh, you had a whole junky Chic documentary oh, ready right. to go. Yeah. And then it was like, oh, he's doing good.
Yeah.
Shit. Keep
yeah,
it rolling.
Keep it going. Yeah. We got our ending, folks.
Right. It could end one way or another.
Yeah.
To think about doing some crack with the Chic like, in a trailer park somewhere in Illinois or Minnesota, wherever he was living.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, that's just letting itself as a doc. You're right. All by itself.
Paco, who is your favorite character in this?
Tony Hawk, probably.
Really?
Yeah.
You identified with the successful white man.
Yes, I did. Only because we have so many similarities. I started a very.
He's wearing knee pads right now.
I am not for the same reason.
Podcaster to wear a helmet.
Not for the same reasons. I also started a very successful washing ironing board company.
Did he?
Yeah, I have my own line of ironing boards.
Yeah.
So no, I like. I guess I don't know. I like Tony. I like Stacy Peralta too. Because he seemed to me like I like the guys behind the machine, you know. And
so George Powell, really.
George Powell, they didn't give him a whole lot of screen time.
Was he more prominent in Dogtown Z Boys?
No.
He's not actually even featured in that because his big contribution, right, is the wheels, right? He made the polyurethane wheels.
I think so.
And that's like what his claim to the. Because it was clay wheels up to a certain point, uh-huh. right? The 50s, 60s skaters.
Yeah.
It's like. Clay wheels.
I just remember when skateboards, like when I was a kid, you could still hit a rock and go flying.
Yeah.
You know, they still didn't roll over little things very easily, you mm-hmm. know. And then they got the polyurethane ones that you could roll over. You know, it's funny.
Do you remember that transition, actually?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I was just parking my car this afternoon across the street, and about 10 kids were filming skateboarding. Literally in front of my car, and I sat in my car for a while to make sure that they saw me so they wouldn't touch my car.
Ah.
And then I got in my apartment and kept looking out of my office window at the, at these kids, these crazy kids.
Get out of my car!
And just hoping that, and then I was like, oh shit, now we're talking about this doc today, which I thought was pretty funny.
So you just made yourself the George Powell.
What I'm saying is, yes.
Why are we paying for all these kids to go around the country and be in these competitions? I don't think it makes financial sense.
Well, the interesting is that it's an autobiography, but very few moments. It's only if it was pertinent to skateboarding, right, did you really understand these people. And I feel like, you know, George Powell probably lived a very nice life.
He's in Santa Barbara.
Yeah,
he's fine.
He's probably didn't have anything like that was impeded or, right, or directly related to the skateboarding, but like, you know, Lance. I got to feel like I felt like I got to know Lance because, like, yeah, he has a kid, and he's like scared for his life about losing his job.
And he's this goofball.
And he's a goofball. And I don't think like a lot of people either had the juice or wanted to reveal it because there's a real sadness to Steve Caballero that you can't, that deserves its own movie.
Really. Oh, yeah, because he cries a little bit.
He cries a little bit, but also his relationship to his dad. Oh. And, like, every skater has, like, a really turbulent relationship to themselves as people, but also to the world around them, because they are such rebels in a way. And they are, like, I don't know if they, thank God they're the best of the best, but so many people become drug addicts, and so many people like lose all their money, and it's just it's very
so it's not like comedy, really. I think, well, that's one thing watching this, I would say, if you don't care about skating at all, there's still a great human story in all of it. I think it's just a story of people finding their creative voice in a way. Like Rodney Mullen really is like an example of like someone finding their creative voice. And then okay, there is some crying when he's like, then I was going to just stop. Mm-hmm. I was going to stop. I was going to just put this thing away, God, that I loved, because my dad wouldn't let me do it.
Dad
anymore.
Said so.
And it's just like, oh my God, that's like, is, and I don't know, I guess we've all maybe had some kind of, it's relatable in a way, even if you do it to yourself, well, like maybe I got to put away this thing that I don't, you know, that I care about, but it just, you know, maybe there's more practical things. When he goes back to school and is just failing at school, that's just like, oh yeah, of course.
Well, yeah. I mean, the most depressed time in my life was like the 6 months after I quit comedy. Like, it was emotional to a level that I had, like, I hate going to the doctors. I literally ran to the doctors to get medication because I couldn't make this feeling stop. Hmm. This like lull and this like this cavern that was created by not doing comedy.
But you chose to stop.
I chose to stop because of, like, on some Lance Mountain shit, I had responsibilities that needed to be addressed. Mm-hmm. I think what keeps me from, you know, dipping my toe back into it full time is the clarity of therapy and finding something to fill that hole so that I'm not defined by my success or my drive to do comedy, mm-hmm. which is like, I think Rodney found that in that he's like, yeah, I'm going to perform or I'm going to skateboard for fun. If I get second or fourth,
yeah,
it's fine.
That is a great message in this story as well, which is ironic because it's coming from these world champions. Yeah. But
it's also what Tony Hawk said too.
Right? Yeah, he burned out.
Yeah, he burned out at being number one all the fucking time and the weight that comes with being number one. I remember, I think it was Rodney that said, it's like the weight of a tombstone, which I love that phrase.
He has the best imagery.
Yeah, he does.
Like, just off the cuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the weight of the tombstone, or talking about like guarding a house, like a Kafka-esque story.
Yeah, you're like the pressure of losing something versus just like enjoying something.
Yeah, absolutely. I Yeah, I was really impressed by some of that stuff that those guys were talking about.
Philosophical guys, skateboarders.
Yeah, who would have thunk it?
I think I've always thought that. I mean, there's definitely some people I knew that are skaters that were just like hooligans, no matter what form of transportation they were going to be on.
Yeah. You know? Did you guys ever go to Tommy's coffee shop? Tommy Guerrero?
Did he own a coffee shop in town?
Yeah.
No, I did not. I've seen him play music before.
It was on like 15th and Mission-ish. Mm. And I used to go there because I used to work right by there. And it was full of skateboards, his skateboards, and albums and a turntable. And you could put on any albums that he had there. And
he does seem like the hippest dude.
Yeah.
like he should just run for mayor or something.
Yeah, it was a pretty cool place.
Like watching him take, like being like in his mid 40s and just taking those hills. It's like, this guy's the fucking coolest.
Well, there's a level of comfort that certain skaters have on boards that I'm just like, your baby's on your shoulders, man. Mm-hmm. Don't even think about falling, or that baby's flying. You're just cool with that? Everyone's cool with that? I guess so. He's made millions of dollars doing this. I guess he's earned the right to endanger a child.
Well, I view like this, a movie like this, as like the fantasy of competence is what I kind of view it as. Like, I'm just like, anything that's like a documentary about someone who's just really good at a thing, even with Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control, I felt like there was this thing too. Like, these people may have like areas of their lives that are not being worked on, but they just excel in one area of their life.
Yeah.
Career-wise, or in
this
case.
Well, when they talk about Tony deciding that he was going to go full tilt with, I think it was Tony, he decided one day that he was just going to go full tilt with skateboarding. He was going to make it his thing. Like, I wish I was, when I was 14, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. Like, you know, like maybe like Dave Chappelle, when he started stand-up at 16.
Yeah.
You know, some of those cats just are like, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it till I die. You know, I think that's...
Yeah. I had no idea at 16, like, what the right thing would be. I mean, I think, ironically, now if I were to go back and tell myself, hey, when you're in 2015, you're going to be, like, doing stand-up comedy and some stuff with music, I'd be like, okay, that seems cool.
What's a podcast?
It's a very long MP3. We can't get into that yet either. I'm going to give you all the secrets. You're going to make a bunch of money.
Don't trust Paco Romain.
Sign, get it in writing before it goes anywhere.
All the popes are evil.
Except for the one. But yeah, no, like, who knows what they want to do when they're fucking 13 years old? These guys
and all these guys did.
They got railroaded into it at all? No, that's just what they wanted to do.
It seemed like there was just a passion of theirs. Yeah. And what I love is that DIY stuff where they're like, well, it kind of went down and there weren't any skate parks anymore because people didn't know how to make them. So we just started fucking building shit our own.
When the infrastructure dies off, when Skateboarding Magazine dies, when the skate parks close, when the pools get torn down, then it's in the end. They're like, oh, all these skate parks were like not designed properly and didn't make any sense. And then they get torn down, and then like the bottom sort of goes out of the financial side of it. Then like, it sounds like they are struggling a little bit, like Pal Peralta is struggling. And then they just do this self-made tour, and like they just find a backyard ramp and just go there. And it's like, yeah, that's probably how like Vans Warped Tour started. Mm-hmm. Also all these things that are like, they just find like an area and then you take it over. Or like,
I love that footage from Kansas when there are just like all these California kids start showing, and then that couple waves, like, and it's like, oh, you guys don't even know what's about to happen.
Yeah. I feel like that is one of the great takeaways from this doc, is that like they've digitized and HD'd like so much great, like, it's almost Americana in a way, like just traveling on the road with your friends.
True.
Find yourself in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Doing what you love in that very small space. Right. And then people gravitating towards that because it's like you're a part of a scene now.
Absolutely, man. I mean, there is something to be said about doing what you love and having people come to you and you not going to them. Like, do what you love. People will come to you, especially if you do it well. You know, and if you're in it because you love it versus you're in it because you want to be famous or rich, you know, which almost never works out, you know, but I do love the Kansas thing. And I love the fact that they're building their own skate parks. And you know, again, it's another analogy to comedy, because comedians will do a set anywhere. Like, I'm surprised you guys, aren't like, can we do just a set here in my living room after this?
It's the beauty
to
of
the hammers.
Yeah, to the sound of construction.
It's the beauty of the malleability of art.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Just, it can happen anywhere if you want it.
What did was there something about the doc, OJ, that you were hoping to see that wasn't in it?
Well, there's another doc on Netflix right now called like something, All This Mayhem or something about somebody who had a similar rise to the Bones Brigade, but they thought that they were all phonies and they eventually beat Tony Hawk in a competition like in the mid 90s. And there's there's something to be said about the corporate infrastructure that like, it almost seemed like this was a corporate documentary, like in-house documentary for Palo Peralta. And that like, they're like, oh, we were so great. Like we made the thing thrive. And like, honestly, they did. But there's so much like kind of darkness to specifically the 90s of like, we have this thing. Let's put all this money behind it. Let's feature these people that we like. And then, you know, if the other people, we're not going to necessarily invest in the culture. Yeah, we're not going to invest in all these people who are coming up. We have our boy. We have Tony. He's going to ride us into the future.
With a video game.
And then there's not like everybody who's driven like that, specifically like Tony. Everybody that's driven like Tony has like a almost a megalomaniac vibe to them that never gets discussed.
Right.
Like I know personally that Michael Jordan's a horrible person. Can't convince a lot of people of that because they haven't watched the obscure documentaries that I've seen.
Okay, what's the Michael Jordan obscure documentary that makes
sense? I think SportsCenter had one. Okay. Like there's like a good 10 documentaries that you have to find on YouTube for Michael Jordan, but like yeah, he punches teammates and he'd like gamble a lot and like all the nefarious things. It's like this weird duality between let's promote this thing as like the hot new slice of America, you know, something cool and fast and new. But then there's all this like, all right, but let's really control this. Let's really like only a few people will benefit from this.
Right.
I'm sorry. There was a theory that David Stern asked Jordan to go play baseball in the mid 90s because his gambling was getting so out of hand.
Yeah.
And the NBA was basically elevated by one person. Michael Jordan kept the NBA in everyone's hearts and minds. So he was just like, why don't you just take a couple years, maybe go play some baseball so that we can get this gambling thing will go down and people won't think about it and won't be in the press and you can come back, you know? So there's that.
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking of, right, this is like, it is propaganda because Pal Peralta's, the end of the movie is like, Pal and Peralta got their relationship back together and went back into business selling skate products, of which you are watching one right now. It's just an autobiography. It's like, it is like a long hagiographic puff piece about like our greatest team in the 80s, which is like, hey, anything great from the 80s, I'll hear about it. But yeah, like it is. It is a little bit like we're capitalists that had our hearts in the right places.
Yeah.
Not like these other capitalists. Yeah. A little bit of that. But I mean the team they even compare them to are like the more bad boy Christian Hosoi kind of guys, which is a lot like that part was like a wrestling to me a little bit, like the part where they like, oh, there's this rivalry.
Yeah.
And like, oh yeah, well you could probably hurt yourself really badly in both sports.
Yeah.
But you know, one is you versus concrete versus another person.
Yeah.
But yeah, they portray them. It is an autobiography. And that's one thing to keep in mind watching the whole thing. It is watching middle-aged men be sad about their lost youth. That is a
just
lot.
Crying into a mirror.
But it is like, there are like, does seem like, you know, Ronnie seems like an artist. Tony seems like a technician. Lance seems like a guy you want to root for.
Yeah.
Yeah. He ends up being like a guy you want to root for also.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know where he fits in, but he's just game. He's got the personality. He's so like photogenic as a kid. Like he's just like, he's just like such a crazy look to him.
Yeah. If anybody like everybody knows those other guys in some capacity, yeah, especially like, in the world.
I grew up knowing who Steve Caballero was and not being a skater.
Yeah, but yeah. Lance Mountain is really the person who's just like, oh, I know that. This is his doc. This is how
you think
I
think it's more him. I think him and Rodney to me.
This is how I understand this person now.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rodney really stands out in this as a very empathetic character and someone you kind of root for. And, you know, and then when you find out at the end, he seems very successful, you know, because he sold his company. And what was it called? World
Industries.
World Industries. Which, what did they do?
It's just skate parts. Boards, yeah.
Oh, skate parks?
No, skate parts.
Oh, parts.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, interesting. Yeah, for a couple cool $20 million, like, you know, it's cool.
There's this guy from the San Diego like music scene that the story with him is supposedly when he was like 14 or 15, him and his dad had invented Airwalks and then they got bought out and for like not that much money. And it's just one of those things like, well, that's how that went. You know, like there's like those kinds of stories too.
Yeah.
It's just like there's so much stuff around. It's still a business. It's still basically a business, you know,
which is why I would like to see like The Broke. Like, yeah. Have you ever seen Broke? The sports documentary.
Oh, yes,
about,
I have.
Yeah,
yes.
I don't want to see that for
the guys that couldn't manage their money.
Yeah. Because
there's lots of them.
Yeah, because this is such an anomaly on so many different fronts that like, I can't with goodwill be like, oh man, skating is so good when there's like so many casualties.
Well, yeah, the guys from the Dogtown and Z Boys film that are in there look the ones that are just like they're just look so tough,
gone.
Roughed up.
Yeah.
I think Jay Adams is in this magazine, by the way. Yeah. But yeah, there's just those guys are just like, they look so wrecked.
Yeah.
And how they might have money. Who knows?
Yeah. How are they supporting themselves? I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. Like, actually, like, I had thought that like every skater who's in their 40s and 50s has knee problems. So, like, I imagine like Tony Hawk even has knee problems.
Yeah.
Imagine Caballero, which I saw he has scoliosis, which I didn't know. He's shorter than me, which made me feel great watching this movie. Like, Steve Caballero is still shorter
than
me.
That final picture, you're like, whoa, he is short.
Yeah. He's 5'3, yeah. But I mean, yeah, he started skating when he was 13. So his center of gravity, he's had a lock on this whole time, I think. Yeah.
Indeed.
He's still actively doing it. It seemed like most of them were actively still doing it.
So OJ, overall, how would you rate this documentary? Do you think it's all time best or unwatchable?
For
in between,
not worth an hour and a half long discussion about.
I mean, after compared to like Dogtown Z Boys, or
it's probably one of my favorite documentary of all time for right now, and in that like it's something I really like being discussed, but there's a true aesthetic to it and a true artistry to it that it's just like, all right, he found, like, from seeing all the other work and seeing how poorly other docs can do it,
right.
Like he really captured what makes the subject special, but also like the weird intrinsic, like the editing's on point, the color is on point, like even like the topography is on point, and like it breezes by for something that's literally 2 hours.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does breeze by, and it is compelling. It's fun to watch, and it takes me back to a certain time and place. You know, I remember seeing Skateboard Magazine, and, you know, once in a while I'd see some skateboard kids, and I'm always just like, that looks like so much fucking fun, but there's no way I could possibly pull that off. Mm-hmm. Like, even now, like, going to certain, you know, like, Stroy, like, there's some cats who are skateboarding around, and I'm always just like, that looks like fun, but it looks like so much work to me too, you know?
Yeah.
Like, maybe I'm just lazy, but it looks like a lot of work, skateboarding.
Well, I mean, I think of it as, it is a thing that, being from this area, it's always been like in the background, and it's always been like, you know, a thing. Like when Razor Scooters came along, I was like, now's my chance to get it slightly in on this. And I never did that even.
I want to take my nerd quotient up.
I was like, oh, I'm close to skating now. I'm like, yeah, never did skateboarding.
Well, that's the cool thing is that like all those people in the doc will say that like, yeah, we tried other stuff and we couldn't do it.
Right.
And that's the cool thing about skating, but also the cool thing about life is that you just keep failing. Like Bobcat Goldthwait has a great line of like, you know, how are you going to know what you want to do unless you fail a lot? Like you have True. To quit almost everything to be good at the thing that you want to do.
I was writing a one-man show called Fired Up about the fact that the reason I do what I do is because I've been fired from every job I've ever had. And I've been fired up to be a comedian yeah. and an actor because I can't obviously do anything else. Yeah. I just get fired all the time. Well, OJ, we usually end this with a question where what is like the documentary that got you into documentaries, mm-hmm. watching documentaries, and or your all-time favorite documentary, something you could recommend?
It's another documentary about a sport in the 80s, but my second favorite documentary of all time is A Courtship of Rivals. It okay. is an HBO documentary about the rivalry between Larry Bird oh. and Magic Johnson.
Oh, nice.
That starts at their NCAA game in 1979.
Indiana State, Michigan State.
And it ends with them on the Dream Team. And I cry every single nice. Time. It's so touching. You really understand that like their duality is closer, you know, they're closer together than two people should ever be mm-hmm. for people who are on, you know, playing a silly sport with different colored jerseys. But like, right. there's a reason why they're so ubiquitous with each other. And there's a reason why there's a Broadway show. And there's a reason why the commercials are so ripped. Like,
yeah,
there's such a beauty between the two that it's, I don't know. It's amazing.
Kind of like that movie Heat.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you, OJ.
Thanks, OJ.
Thank you.
Okay, your laughter is bringing much joy to our podcast.
Thanks for listening.
You can follow OJ Patterson at courtingcomedy.com.
You can find episodes of SupDoc on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please review, subscribe, and rate.
And you can follow us on Twitter at SupDocPodcast and online at SupDocPodcast.com.
This show is produced by Will Scovel, and our theme music is by David Siegel.
If you want to suggest a documentary or a future guest, please email us at SupDocPodcast@gmail.com.